So we've been jumping around a lot in eras. We watched a bunch of new shows, then we jumped all the way back to Father Knows Best. But this week we're back to new shows because this is a show I've been kind of had on the back burner for ages. This is also, I guess, a sign of how long we've been doing this, just watching random old TV shows. Is my dad and your husband Neil? He recommended this show. He was like, "Hey, this show is cool, The Queen's Gambit. It's about chess. You guys should watch that on your podcast." And then not long after that, he was in the hospital. And I remember that week too, because I remember that's the week we watched Amos and Andy. And we were just kind of like depressed of like, ah, man, dad's in the hospital. This sucks. Should we even bother doing a podcast? Like, well, let's just watch it. And then it turns out Amos and Andy is like really interesting, one of these shows that really kind of got forgotten because it's so racial. And I don't think it was offensive personally, but nowadays, yeah, I guess like people just don't talk about it anyway. But that's besides the point. That just makes me think of those sad hospital days, Amos and Andy, of all things. But yeah, then he sadly passed away. So then I didn't want to watch this show because that's just, it's like, that's just makes me think of sad stuff, But now that it's been some number of years and the anniversary came up, I was like, oh, let's watch The Queen's Gambit now. Now we can watch The Queen's Gambit in, remembrance of the last show that dad was like, hey, what a cool show. You should watch this show. But what I didn't know, because I had no idea why he was watching it, it was just a big deal at the time, 2020, this show came out. Everyone was talking about it. I just assumed he was on that bandwagon. But no, you were saying he was somewhat of a chessman in his younger days.
I don't know if he was a chessman, but he knew how to play chess, and he insisted that I learn how to play chess. And I was at the view of, oh, all that carrying on and going on for days and days of trying to beat somebody. I couldn't be bothered. I'm a checkers person.
Right. And in both those cases, like the difference, I think, in, I don't know, one of the big differences in games is the hidden information and not hidden information. Like in later years, dad got into poker, which is more hidden. And I always played like Magic the Gathering, which is really random and hidden. You don't know what the other person has, you don't know what you're going to draw. Where chess and even checkers or Go or any of those games, to me, they're just overwhelming because there's no hidden information. It's all right there. So chess in particular is like, all right, who can memorize 40,000 potential moves? Go. Like I played a little chess myself, but I wasn't really interested in trying to become good at that because it's just too much.
And I occasionally would go and play bingo, and Neil would just kind of blow that off like that's just so random and it's complete chance, which it is.
Right.
But he was more into the intelligentsia of chess, where you really have to think out your moves. He had a book on it too, because I remember reading the book trying to catch up with him, and oh, I gave up on that pretty darn quick.
Well, I remember too, it was such a big deal when Big Blue, the chess computer, beat the chess champion or whatever. And people were like, oh my God, it's the beginning of the Terminator. It's the end is nigh. Nowadays, we're in the middle of the AI flood and like it's getting even worse. But that never surprised me at all. Like, why wouldn't a computer be able to? It's kind of like sad that we didn't have computers that could beat a person yet. That just means we didn't have very good computers. It's exactly the kind of thing a computer should be good at doing. So, yeah, personally, with chess, for me, it's like, yeah, that idea of trying to. A human trying to reach computer levels, not especially compelling to me.
And I was more into admiring chess sets. Like, I remember when we went to Europe, we went around to places where they had games and stuff, and some of the chess sets were beautiful, beautiful carvings, and some made out of ebony, and some made out of glass, and some made out of granite. Just that interested me much more than playing the game. Like, okay, whatever. Whatever turns your crank.
Yeah, it's funny that we're about to watch this award-winning chess show, and we're really just shitting hard on chess. Sorry to all the chess fans out there, because yeah, speaking of Magic the Gathering, I mean, what could be nerdier than that, right? These little cards where I'm a wizard and I'm gonna shoot a fireball and summon a dragon. But before I started playing Magic, I did attempt to go hang out with the chess club in like junior high. And I mean, I played Magic, I fucking watched Buffy, I worked at a comic shop. I think I'm pretty nerdy fellow. I couldn't do it. Those people were too much for me. I was like, I don't want to even hang out with you guys. Like, this is a level. I mean, we didn't really know about the term autism back then or on the spectrum. But if those motherfuckers weren't on the spectrum, I'll be a monkey's uncle, So yeah, that's where we're coming from, is no particular love for chess. But yeah, I don't know. I was a little surprised to learn just that Dad did think of himself as trying to be a chess guy or whatever.
Yeah, and he was pretty smart at it. Like he could beat a few people at it, but then he'd get the book out and read the book and learn all these moves. And he probably memorized them so that when he played, he just didn't play for the fun of playing. He was kind of into that whole strategy that was involved in how you would beat the other guy. Very much into that. Same thing with poker. When he get involved in something, he got kind of intense about it.
Right.
And would follow through. It just wasn't like, oh, well, let's just have a quick game and get it over with and then go have a cup of tea. Nothing like that. No. You took it seriously. He took it seriously.
So yeah, apologies to Dad on high that we're not taking chess as seriously as you once did. But we are watching the show finally. We're finally going to watch the show. It was just a random offhand thing. Just, oh, I happen to be watching this show. Hey, you should watch this show. It's pretty good. But it's just coincidentally that this was like his final decree laid down upon us. You must watch The Queen's Gambit. Like, it wasn't anything like that. But it's just like, yeah, sure, though. Why not? Let's watch it.
Sure. Why not?
So I only have a little bit of info about this. The Queen's Gambit is a 2020 American coming-of-age period drama television miniseries. It's based on a 1983 novel by Walter Tevis, which Dad was a big reader as well. But he did read kind of more like, you know, Dortmunder books and stuff. It doesn't really seem like The Queen's Gambit is necessarily the type of book he would read. But maybe if he was into chess, particularly in 1983, maybe he did read this book. But who knows? What do they say? Citation needed. We have no idea.
He probably did read it, because although you think that he read things only of a certain genre, he read everything. Neil had, ever since I knew him, a wide range of spy novels, history novels, chess books probably, poker books, whatever was suiting his fancy at the time. He was a voracious reader.
I always remember, too, because, yeah, he really did just always want to have a book to read. There's just a little geography thing I learned, but I always was kind of handy to know, to keep in the mind. As he said, he was traveling through Quebec, obviously, just to go visit his mom at some point. And he just wanted to stop in somewhere and just buy whatever paperback novel. He's like, whatever, I'll just read whatever I can find just for this trip. And that's when he learned that if you're outside of Montreal, if you're in the more rural areas of Quebec, you can't even get English books. They are for real French. Like, people who don't speak English, books are all in French. And he's like, yeah, I could try, I guess, to fight my way through reading a French book, but he just didn't bother. But I was like, oh, because then later on, I did meet people in life. Like, one of my first roommates in Vancouver was this girl who didn't start to learn English from rural Quebec, didn't start to learn English until she was 16. Like, didn't even start. I was like, man, so that's just an interesting side note that, yeah, in Quebec, they take it serious, man. That place is French as heck.
Your father always had a book with him. We used to have to go to these law courses. We'd be up to law school, supposedly listening with this group of people
to
legal beagles who were supposedly educating us and teaching us stuff. So Neil would be there. He didn't even hide it. He'd be sitting at the big desk. Neil would have the big hard-covered book out. We're reading along some other thing. It had nothing to do with the law that he was supposed to be listening to. It's like he didn't have to take an exam on it. Well, he could probably have answered whatever he was reading at the time. Yeah, he just, he wouldn't even, at first he used to try to hide it. Like, he put it on his lap underneath the desk. But then after a while, he didn't even bother doing that. He'd just plunk it right on the big desk, and he'd be reading along there while everybody else was being very legalese, listening to that stuff.
You know, it's funny too, I didn't think about this till after, but then after Dad passed away, and then when we saw his brother Lawrence, where Lawrence was saying like, oh yeah, your dad, you know, is always reading books, did you take after him, you that way? And I mean, I am writing a novel right now, but I hate being that guy who's like, oh, I'm working on my novel, because I've been working on my novel for 7 goddamn years. Like, you know, it's just obnoxious. I figure I'll wait till it's done and then I can tell people about my dumb novel. So I didn't bring it up. But then after, I was like, oh, I guess that actually, I mean, that would have been an appropriate time. Like, oh, yeah, I am a chip off the old block. I'm writing a book. And then Lawrence died. And I'm like, oh, well, he'll didn't get to tell him about my novel. Anyway, everybody dies. That's the theme of this week's episode. So the little bit that I know about this show, I've just got the series received critical acclaim with particular praise for Taylor-Joy's performance, that is, I guess, the actress, the cinematography and production values. It also received a positive response from the chess community for its often accurate depictions of high-level chess, and data suggests that it increased public interest in the game. And yeah, the list of awards this show won is frankly stupid. I'm scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. I'm like, are you kidding? This thing won like 30 awards. So I think it's a 7 or 8 part series, but we only have the first one, you know? If this turns us into chess fanatics, we can always tune in on our own time after. But for these purposes, we're just going to watch the first episode.
Well, I hope it's got more of a plot than just moving the pieces around because, well, we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I got to assume for it to have been this cultural phenomenon that it was, like everybody was talking about this show, I presume there's a lot more to it than that.
Well, let's check it out and find out.
That's what we're here to learn.
And then I'll go back to playing checkers.
What would that even be called instead of the Queen's Gambit? Like, what's a checker term? King me? Queen me. That's what they'd call it.
Mademoiselle? Mademoiselle Armand, vous êtes là? Mademoiselle?
I'm coming. Jesus. Oh! Je descends tout de suite.
So yeah, it turns out you have seen this before then, you said, or at least this episode.
Or parts of it. I think I might have missed the very beginning of it, but I definitely saw this. It was excellent because it's not all about chess. Yeah. It has quite a nice storyline to it and explaining how she gets so involved in chess.
Yeah, I still feel like a Philistine. I've just like it's like kind of got to get through the chess parts, you know. Like, yeah, I definitely found the rest of it much more interesting than chess. But obviously, it has to have the chess stuff because we saw that little bit at the start of her future, where she's traveling around to different countries being a chess champion. But yeah, especially in a weird way, the nice janitor man who teaches her chess down in the basement. Like, I was kind of thinking, like, in some ways, he's my least favorite character because he really is like one of those guys. Like, his whole life is chess, and he's using it as a way to pretend that he's smart and cool. He's just a jerk off, you know. Like, I've just known so many people like that in life, in their various disciplines, that they latch onto something and they really like, this is all that matters.
Well, now see, I get the impression that the man doesn't have any life. He seems to live in that orphanage. Right. He's the custodian. He's got his job. He's got chess. He doesn't seem to have a family. I mean, she goes down there at all kinds of weird times of the day, in the evenings and everything else, and he's there. So I suspect he's just a loner who has no outside life. So that explains why chess is his thing, because if you have nothing else going on and all you do is clean the place and go to bed and get up and clean the place again, you got to have an outlet somewhere. So that, to me, explains why he's almost a fanatic about chess.
Sure. And at least he, to his credit, he, you know, ended up being a relatively soft character. I was really afraid it was going to be that super stereotypical thing, like when she beats him, of like, now I will never speak to you of chess again, you know, because chess is all that matters and blah, blah, blah. But now he turned out to be okay, ultimately. But yeah, that, I guess I'm kind of like right on the balance beam of, I wouldn't be disinterested in watching the rest, but it also isn't like, oh, like I got to watch the rest. I think in some ways the chess is kind of the tipping point. If I was more interested in chess, I would be like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'll watch all of these. But it's like, yeah, I kind of like all the other stuff. I don't care about chess though.
You know? See, I saw a movie on Billy Fisher. Is that his name?
Bobby Fisher.
Bobby Fisher, famous chess guy, and it was all about chess. Very dry, whereas this has got enough of a storyline going to it that the chess is almost like a sideline.
Right.
It could be anything. It doesn't have to be chess that she's interested in. She could be a famous ballerina, a famous sports person. The storyline is what's holding this together. Here's this orphan girl, and there's not much else going on in her life other than that. The day-to-day life in the orphanage and the tranquilizers that they give them to keep them all calmed down, and then they cut them off from them. And So she's obviously a very intelligent girl who's got to find some other outlet somewhere. But whether it is chess, but whether it would have to be chess, if there was something else that caught her fancy, maybe a famous figure skater, for example, then it could just very well have been that as chess.
Really creepy too, right, with the pills. I mean, in some ways, you know, I sort of can sympathize. I'm just like, yeah, who wants to deal with all these kids? But it's also not like, they're running like a, frankly, just if there were boys around, it'd be way worse. This seems unnecessary for these timid orphans.
Remember that this would be the 1950s, because the show opens in 1967 and she is about 17, probably. So let's say she was born in 1950. She's 9 years old. This would be 1959, 1960. The 50s are well known for the mother's little helpers that women were taking because they were so bored with their suburban lifestyles that they were depressed and they'd just go off to the pharmacy or their doctor or whatever and they'd be prescribed tranquilizers. That was a big thing of the 50s.
Yeah, I remember, I'm thinking of this also because that one lady in the orphanage had the exact Ayn Rand haircut. But for years, Ayn Rand was on, they were weight loss pills, but they were actually like amphetamines and, you know, helped her focus too. It's like, wow, I take these. Not only do I eat less, I can sit at my fucking typewriter for 9 hours and not even care. And it wasn't until she eventually, she had a bunch of that stuff of like when she finally learned that they were just drugs. She like went cold turkey and stopped. Same thing with smoking. She didn't believe all the propaganda about smoking being bad until she saw an x-ray of her own lungs and just quit that day. So it's like impressive that she's had the willfulness to just quit, but brutal that you have to do that. That, yeah, they were just like, just take this, take that. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it.
But it was a time frame when let's take smoking, for example. The smoking ads and the ad men who were promoting cigarettes in the 1950s almost showed it as a healthy thing.
Yeah.
It was, you were not anybody unless you had a cigarette in your mouth. And then they said, oh, the filters, how safe the filters were. Well, no, they weren't. But people just smoked. And if you didn't smoke, what was wrong with you? And it was the same thing with tranquilizers. People took tranquilizers all the time, and they drank all the time, and they drove when they drank, and nobody questioned it. And it was only later in the 1960s when the drug culture started, in the late 1960s, and people were taking other drugs, like marijuana and LSD and that sort of thing, that people sort of then started looking at the tranquilizer world and saying, well, wait a minute, what's the difference here? But up to that point, oh, yes, have your bottle of pills with you. Take sleeping pills. Take diet pills. You're feeling blue? Take a green pill. Take a blue pill. Take a yellow pill. It was just, it was accepted. So that's not unusual to me to see those big bottles of pills there. But obviously, somebody is starting to question the effect those pills were having on those children, because that's why they told them that they couldn't give them out anymore.
It also makes me think of, there's this video game called Bioshock. It takes place in the 50s, but it's a 1950s where a super rich guy made like an undersea Atlantis. And it's like, get away from the government, live here undersea and, you know, live a free life. But it's got all this weird stuff where you can buy, in that case, it was these injectable things you buy, but you buy it out of a vending machine and you inject yourself with this special plasmid that gives you powers. And they're just like, why not? But it does have that same, even though that was much more fantastical, that definite same feel as this. Yeah, super creepy for sure.
So when we think about the 1950s, the late 50s, when this would be set, you know, we have this image of the 50s, everybody being happy and clean houses and suburbia and beautiful cars and nice jobs and everything was great. But it had this underside to it of, yeah, they were feeding themselves pills, or orphanages were tranquilizing children because they didn't want to be faced with any disruption. And nobody was questioning it until much later. But obviously, this child in this one, she's addicted. And she knows enough to hold them back so that she can get a real good high when she takes a lot of them. Nobody questions the withdrawal. Like, they just stopped giving them the pills. And now they've got a bunch of jittery people all over the place, and nobody questions it. It was a time that when you read about it, it's got this underside to it that is really dark. But on the surface, everything seems just great and happy and bright. But it really wasn't. And it was the forerunner to the rebellions of the 1960s.
But yeah, this tied in a lot better than I expected to last week, to Father Knows Best, you know, because we were talking about that era. I'm surprised. I didn't expect this to tie in so well, but the two things really go side to side in some ways. If, like, Father Knows Best was from the actual era, here's the way we're presenting ourselves. Total BS. And it's kind of neat to watch a modern show that's like, now the modern representation of that era, yeah, is much, much different, obviously. A lot, like, all the accoutrement is the same. Oh, there's the old pencil sharpener. Oh, there's the old telephone. Oh, look at all that stuff. But the underlying is much, much more clear about the underlying society and what was going on there.
And later, when the show opened and you saw her in Paris in 1967, you get the sense that this is a girl with a problem. She can't even get herself ready to go to that chess tournament or whatever it is she's going to. She can't even get herself together to go there. I mean, obviously, she's in a big, big famous city. She's going to play against some pretty powerful people. And yet she's flying around that room like kind of a banshee. Can't find her shoes. Her hair's disheveled. She's running out of the place and to get to it. She's late. She can't even organize herself. And that is probably a fallback to whatever happened to her growing up in that orphanage. She didn't have a whole lot of... There was stability, but it was weird stability. They had rules, and everybody seemed kind in it. Nobody's mean or angry, and she's not punished. But yet they're giving them those pills to keep them under control.
That is one thing, though, I do appreciate about this show, and maybe it's, you know, more to speak to the book that it was based on, but I was glad that they took a softer touch on some of that stuff. Like, they didn't just hit you with all the stereotype stuff of, like, oh, you've been playing chess in the basement? Well, now we will fire the janitor then. Or, like, oh, you want to go to the high school to play chess? I forbid it. Like, I'm really glad they didn't do all that stuff, because I'm 1,000,000% done with shows like that. Like, shows that are just there to rile you up and, you know, just like, let's just be overly dramatic. Even this, like, to me, I feel like if I ever get to make a show or a movie, I think people are going to feel like it was made by an alien. Because even this, I felt like, still had too much of that incidental music that's telling you how to feel about stuff. If I ever do a show, it's going to be bone dry. It's going to be no fucking music like that. No incidental music. You know, you can figure out how you're supposed to feel by yourself. But this show still did it quite light, quite a light touch. And yeah, it's just... Because if it did any of that stuff of just the angry schoolmarm and all that, I'd be straight out. I'm like, I'm not watching this. I've seen too many shows like this. So I like that this show isn't that way. It does seem like a more balanced version. Because, yeah, like, real life is, it's dramatic enough. You don't need to throw in these characters that are, like, off the wall and just, like, too much. And everyone in this was quite realistic, pretty even-keeled.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. Because all of those institutions, we get the image in this century that all of those institutions were terrible and everybody was beaten and given rotten food and treated really badly and put in closets for discipline, dark places. And they couldn't have all been like that. And if you were running a place like that, of course you had to have some rules and some control. Otherwise, you'd have complete bedlam. Now, whether you should have been giving them green pills every day, maybe that should have not. But it was a different time in a different place. And as we just said, it was quite acceptable to take tranquilizers every time you turned around. Nobody questioned it. It wasn't an odd thing. It was like getting in your car after you'd had a number of drinks. Nobody questioned it. It was like getting in a car without a seatbelt on. Cars didn't even have seatbelts in those days. So you have to look at it from that time and that place and what was going on then. And when you look at it through the eyes of today, you can't always be negative about it. Because what would you have done in the same situation 50, 60, 70 years ago?
Yeah, and as far as the pills go, it makes me think of there was a movie called Girl Interrupted, but it was about a girl who got sent away to a place for for electroshock therapy, you know, when she was in her early 20s. And yeah, they just zapped her up for weeks and months. And it's just like, yeah, sure, why not? Or I don't know what era this is from, but I did read about people, if you had seizures, one of the ways to solve your seizures, quote unquote solve, is to separate the two, to cut your brain stems. These two halves of your brain aren't connected anymore. And you stop having seizures, but then suddenly it's like you can see a cup and you know what it is. But like you don't know the word cup anymore, but you can write cup. Just all this weird shit because your brain isn't connected anymore. And they were just doing that to people.
We've gotten so hardened with all of our anti-institutions and all this business that, I mean, when you were first watching that and the girl went to the basement and learns how to play chess, you're wondering, is he gonna molest her? Is he gonna try feeling her up? You know, and it was kind of nice that he didn't. He's just a man who likes playing chess, and he teaches her how to do it. There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't have to be, oh, some evil sexual thing gonna go on, and he's gonna try to take advantage of her, which is what would today we would just presume that that's what's gonna happen. But it doesn't always happen that way.
Yeah.
There are people who are decent and enjoyed the company of knowing that he had a little genius on his hands and that he could teach her things.
Yeah, I especially do appreciate that. I remember I read a book once about, I think it was writing plays. Anyway, it was a book from the 80s about writing advice. And there was a chapter called Conflict, Conflict, Conflict. That was just, you know, saying like, if there's anywhere you can add conflict, do it. Keep people engaged. Make sure they can't turn on the channel or won't, you know, make it a page turner, whatever. And I disagree heavily with that. To me, that just tires me out. It feels like I'm carrying a heavy weight watching stuff like that, where every little thing is more conflict. Like, come on, get out of here. So yeah, I think maybe we're moving away from that era. And I'm all for it. Because yeah, the lighter touch is fine, you know? We just... There's plenty. This girl's got plenty of fucking problems. She doesn't need 10 more problems just to ratchet up the TV show. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's where I'm kind of right in the middle of, like, do you want to watch more? We could. Not today, but I could get some more episodes.
I wouldn't mind watching at least another one, because this show was the introductory show, which showed her background and how she became the famous chess person that she becomes. So it would be rather interesting, since it's called The Queen's Gambit, it would be kind of interesting to see perhaps a little more of the chess stuff and how she handles that chess world. Because really the chess part of this, of this introductory show was really not that overpowering. It was not that overwhelming.
Right.
It wasn't all about chess, which was fine, which was good.
So yeah, that could be a good way to take this, I guess. So for the purposes of this podcast, this will be it, you know, just our review of the first episode, but just in our own time, yeah, we can just go week to week. I'll just grab the next one and then we'll just go from there and just see if we want to watch the next one or whatever. And yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good thumbs up. I did check too, because I noticed that they said that the actress got a lot of accolades, but we only saw the main actress for like a few minutes in this episode. So I did double check. Are they referring to the kid version? Because I was like, yeah, I'd give that kid version plenty of accolades. But no, apparently it is the adult version who won all the awards. But that kid version was no slouch.
That little girl was a very good actress. She really knew how to underplay things. Like you said, there was only one point where you saw her smile.
Yeah, because they gave her that dumbass doll.
Yeah. And she was really good at, underplaying. She didn't overreact. She, even when she was playing chess, I noticed that she didn't look at the board. She looked at the board to see the initial move, but then she looked at the player all the time. Whereas sometimes when you watch chess games, people playing chess, they're focused on the board and the pieces. They're looking at the pieces. She didn't do that. And I thought that was unusual. But then I presumed that maybe what she was doing, because she said she could play chess in her mind. She watched the move. She looked at the player, but she was playing the next move in her mind. And she did a good job at doing that. Very good.
That's where, if I was, though, an executive at Netflix, is where I'd be like, I could be that, like, super moron executive that people tell anecdotes about decades later, where they'd have this complex show and this cool director and cinematography and everything's all set up and stuff. And I'd be the guy that's like, yeah, that's cool, but checkers? You sure we can't change it to checkers? But yeah, no, thumbs up. Thumbs up to Queen's Gambit.
Thumbs up.
Good job, Dad. Good show. We'll get a Ouija board out for next year and see what else he's been watching. I must sound so disrespectful to my dead dad, but, you know, hey.
Well, he's gone now. He'll never know.
Yeah. Do you think they don't think they have, maybe they do have podcasts in heaven, but probably not ours. We don't have enough listeners yet. We'll get there.